Radio X.
Welcome to the Evening Show podcast from Radio X with me, Gordon Smart, and producer Vin. Thank you very much for joining us. We've got a bumper edition for you this week. Joe Lycett, the great comedian's on there. Jimmy Nesbitt, a good friend of mine, and also a really good actor. You wouldn't know it. He's an entrepreneur, Vin. Was that a surprise to you?
Yeah, I had no idea about that. You were telling me, and he was telling us as well, wasn't
Clever
he?
Clever boy.
He's sort of behind a lot of productions that go on in Northern Ireland, right?
Yeah, you would never imagine it, but Jimmy's got a massive hand in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he's sort of a facilitator. I imagine he's like a sort of Winston Wolfe type character.
Yeah, he told us that, and then I could see in his head thinking, I hope I've paid all the tax that I should have done. I've also had Beck on the show this week, and he's quite an interesting character too. So a lot of characters on the show this week. I hope you enjoy.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This is the Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart. Now, I'm absolutely thrilled to say I've got a guest on the show who's one of the most colourful and innovative musicians of his generation. He's on his 13th album now and sounding fresher than ever. On the line right now, Beck, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excellent. How is life? Can you set the scene for me? Tell me exactly where you are and paint a picture for our listeners.
Okay, I'm on the U2 tour and we just played in Buffalo last night and I am now in Toronto overlooking the city.
A beautiful view.
A very Canadian view.
Can you see the CN Tower from there?
Not from here.
That's Bono's room. That's Bono's room. He can see it.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah, Bono's up there. Yeah.
Now, Beck, I've got to ask you about working with Greg Kurstin on this new album. He's just finished working with Liam Gallagher as well. And from what I gather, I think you've pretty much tired him out between the two of you over the last year. Are you feeling slightly guilty about leaving him a broken man after working on this album?
He's doing pretty good. Greg takes care of himself, I think, you know. But he is a busy man. But, you know, he works very quickly. He's able to do a lot.
When you know somebody as well as Greg, and I know you've toured with him in the past, does that mean you push him harder or is it more difficult to make big demands of him when you're in the studio? Because I know that the instrumentation, you've pushed really hard on this. So is that hard or easier?
He put a lot into this because he can work quick. He can do a song in an afternoon easily, you know. Some of these songs we did pretty quick, but he put a lot of time. We spent, you know, a good 2 or 3 years working on the tracks, and I think a lot of that was trying to come up with a sound, you know, come up with an identity for this group of song, kind of reinvent a style that's specific to this record, to these songs, you know, which is, you know, it's a tall order. Ultimately, we just had a good time, you know, just did a lot of fooling around. He has such a command of, I mean, he's an incredible musician. He's a jazz pianist.
Yeah.
And most producers don't play, you know, they don't play an instrument. You know, they're coming more from the big picture. So he kind of has it all. So we can just talk music and get into that side of it.
Yeah, Beck, it feels like we're living in a fairly miserable world right now. But when I heard this song for the first time, it feels really upbeat. And it just made me feel a little bit like, you know, I was listening to the Beach Boys. It put a smile on my face. Is that something that was deliberate or it just, that's the way the music fell out of you on this album?
Oh, that makes me happy because before we even wrote a song, that's what I wanted to do, you know. I think I was on tour and was playing a lot of the songs that I've written. I just felt like I just wanted to make a group of songs that had that feeling to it. You know, I did think about all the great records like that, you know, whether it's Stevie Wonder or even The Clash or Bowie or, you know, all the artists that just give you that feeling, you know. A lot of my records, some of it's a little more aggressive or a little bit obtuse and, you know, jarring.
Yeah.
So just something that just kind of gives you that feeling, you know. Those kind of songs are, you know, it's tricky. It's not, they're not an easy, they feel easy, but they're not easy to make,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to put a smile on the listener's face right now. I'm going to play the new single. This is Beck and his brand new single, Up All Night.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Here's a wee music story that caught my eye. A woman who beguiled Jimi Hendrix 50 years ago is putting a note he gave her up for auction. A lady called Anthea Connell, who's now 69, caught the Guitar Hero's eye back in 1967 when she was only 19 years old. She met Jimi when her then boyfriend's band Sons and Lovers were supporting him in Lincolnshire. Now, the lady Anthea, who's she was 19 at the time, as I say, she's been recalling the moment she was handed the note from the icon, which was written on the back of a guitar string packet. And the note said, "To Anthea, love and kisses to you forever. I wish I could really talk to you. Stay sweet, Jimi Hendrix. quite polite, but there's a hidden meaning to that, isn't there? Anthea said, I was completely starstruck. I'd love to tell you that we had a deep and meaningful conversation. I must have mumbled something, but I've no recollection of it. I was totally awestruck. Jimi Hendrix was a complete icon. He turned to his band members on stage and asked one of the guys to give him something to write on. He came back with a guitar strings packet, which may well have been his. He proceeded, that just adds the value up in the auction, by the way. He proceeded to write me this wonderful message on the back. The item goes up for auction in October, by the way, and it's expected to raise between £2,000 and £3,000. Not bad for 30 seconds of Anthea's life.
Radio. Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I've still got Beck on the line. He's in Toronto at the moment. He's on tour with U2. Beck, what's it like being on tour with the U2 lads? And I've seen a little bit of it this year. I was in Dublin at Croke Park with 100,000 Irishmen watching them on stage. When you're touring in America with them, do you get a chance to enjoy it as a fan, or have you got to be disciplined and sort of keep out of the way and just concentrate on doing your own thing? Because I can imagine it's quite difficult when you get sort of swept up in the excitement and euphoria of U2 live.
Yeah, no, I got to watch the show the other night, and everybody's extremely generous and friendly, and get to hang out with the band, and you know, running into them backstage and watching the shows. I mean, their fans have been incredibly kind and all showing up for us to play. You know, because you can open for a band sometimes and it's half full, and
yeah,
you know, people are just going off to get a drink or something, but they're all there and, you know, having a good time. So it's really, and the sound is incredible. You know, it's just very, it's very special, you know.
Beck, I've been really lucky in my time to travel quite a lot and see a lot of bands in different places around the world. And the quality of the U2 catering, how highly would you recommend it compared to some of the stuff you've seen on over the
it's
years?
It's definitely a cut above.
Excellent.
They do have a nice steak and there was lobster the other night.
Incredible, incredible. Beck, thanks so much for coming on and speaking to us. I know you're a really busy man. Best of luck with the 13th album. Hopefully we'll see you really soon touring that. Yeah, all the very best, and thanks for putting a smile on our face.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the kind words. I'll talk to you soon.
Radio. Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
And now it's time for Classic Albums.
The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week.
X.
So every Monday night we peel back the layers of the onion and delve a little bit deeper into an album we love here at Radio X. Over the past couple of months we've done Screamadelica by Primal Scream, London Calling last week by The Clash, and Joshua Tree by U2, to name just a few. But tonight we're going back to 2001, 11th of June, over 16 years ago, for Travis and the Invisible Band. It's mad to think about it now, but around that time, that album was everywhere. It was produced by Nigel Godrich, who you'll know from Radiohead fame. It was released on Epic Records, and it went to number one for 4 weeks in the UK, which was a huge achievement around that time, because albums sold in their millions. They sold more copies in those 4 weeks than the previous album, The Man Who Sold, in 6 months. So it was a little bit of a return to form, you could call it. It had great songs in it as well. Sing, Side, Flowers in the Window, Afterglow, Pipe Dreams, and Follow the Light. It was a beautiful showcase of Fran Healy's writing prowess. Full of delicate and welcoming songs. I listened to it today on my journey down, and it felt really, really warm. I'd forgotten just how warm the album was, and it's easy to forget, like I say, how everybody had that album. It was on The Office, Only Fools and Horses that made an appearance there. It was the background to almost everything that was on TV, in everyone's car, every coffee table. They were like the Adele of their day. you've not really heard people say that before, but it was omnipresent. Fran was everywhere, and his vocals got loads of praise. It was a well-critiqued Vin. A lot of people liked it.
Yeah, his vocals in particular. I think recently on the Evening Show we've had classic albums where we quite like that sort of angsty, yelpy voice a lot of singers have, sort of straining for those vocals. But actually the beauty in Fran Healy's vocals is that he knows where to draw the line. He knows to sort of tie himself down, be a little bit restrained, and just captures those nice little melancholic moments.
Yeah, it feels like he was the soundtrack to every festival I went to between 1996 and about 2003. Lovely live as well, absolutely lovely live. There's a chap called Leonard Lair who's a critic, and he said, Travis are clearly above turning into victims of their own success. As an exercise in how modern rock should sound like, the Invisible Band will take some beating, but this was something special. The album is earnest and honest, never too sentimental, never over the top. The strings are lovely as well. That's one thing I noticed when I was listening to it today. And maybe you knew this, maybe you didn't. Flowers in the Window, which is one of the most famous songs from the album, was co-written by Paul McCartney, but he never took a credit, which I really admire.
That's pretty good, isn't it? To be able to get Paul McCartney to help out. They had trouble finishing the song, so he helped them finish the song.
That's right.
And then they never gave him any credit for it.
Yeah, I was thinking back to this. I think they must have met on the War Child album. I think it was Help 2. Not the first one, but the second one. And they wrote a song together called Beautiful Occupation. Imagine having the confidence, right, when you're struggling to finish a song. Say, Macca,
well, let's just get a Beatle in.
Come here a second. Right? I'm struggling to get to the end of this song. Can you help us out? But he did the business. And it's probably, in the canon of all their songs, one of their most famous and one of the most touching. And they were really good lads as well, Travis. I remember they'd always dedicate songs to members of their cast and crew, you know, everybody that was around them when they were on stage. They were really good at that. And one of my other memories, 2000, I think it would have been 2002, one of my first jobs in newspapers, I was sent to Dougie Penn and Kelly MacDonald from Trainspotting's wedding to see if I could get a story from it. And I didn't. Just too much respect for them. But it was a great album, The Invisible Band, from 2001. Can you believe that? 16 years ago. So I'm going to play you two songs back to back now on Radio X from this classic album section of the show. Side, followed by Sing.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week. X. Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Very excited about our next guest because we've had some great characters, some incredible actors over the years in this studio, and we've got one of the best today. He describes himself as the drinking woman's George Clooney. He's been in some of the biggest TV shows I've loved over the last few years, including things like Occupation, Lucky Man. But he's back, Series 7 of Cold Feet, Mr. Jimmy Nesbitt.
Hello, Gordon. Good evening. How are you?
A rapturous round of applause this evening. Jimmy, it's always great to see you. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Very good. You know, Lucky Man started yesterday, but I don't start until tomorrow.
Right, yeah. That's in the contract.
Well, it's that great old actor's joke about, you know, they wait for a job forever and they kind of tell him, I've got this incredible job, I'm working with the best actors in the world, the best director. But the best thing about it is I've got the first couple of days off.
It's the way to work it.
You know.
It's the way to work it. So we keep talking about nostalgia, right, on the show, because we've gone through the spell of 20-year anniversary series of great albums, and I think about Cold Feet in relation to music that was around at the time, so it really puts me in a place. But I know you love music yourself.
Yeah, indeed.
And of course it filmed in Manchester, I think, didn't it, the first
time? It did, right? You know, it's 20 years itself. And also, when I think about the first series coming out, it was because the theme song to it was Female of the Species.
Yeah, Space.
Right. Space, that's
Scouse
right.
Band, yeah.
That's right. And actually, I mean, the show obviously kind of garnered success the more it went on. But actually, the soundtracks of the show really, I mean, you know, those were albums that sold incredibly well back in the days when things like compilations like that really did sell well. And very much in the way the music kind of charts the different stages of our lives, I think one of the things about Cold Feet was it really did that as well. People have that kind of the evocative notion of and the nostalgic notion of Cold Feet, which is why when it came back, I think people were probably a bit worried, will those characters still have a relevance to people? And of course, in a way, they do, because we've got older, the characters have got older, and it's good to see where they are, as it is sometimes to have a look where we are.
How long did it take you to make the decision to go back? Because I'd imagine out of everybody, it's a big call for you. Really,
it's a very relevant question. I mean, I think they'd wanted to bring it back for a while, but clearly because the show had been a success and it opened up so many doors for other things, I was able to kind of, you know, go on and build a career, really, mainly out of Cold Feet, although I'd worked before. But I didn't want to kind of, the idea of prolonging a show or bringing something back and it dying was very worrying. But the script was good, and I think we all seemed to feel, do you know what, it's time to bring something back, to revisit those characters and try and, also because in a world that was changing, it's quite interesting to try and bring those back and try and see with some of the good things, you know, that are going on.
You must have been asked a lot of questions about this because you've been on the circuit doing the promotion for it. If there's one question you haven't been asked yet, that you would have liked to have been asked about Cold Feet, what is it?
Wow.
That's a secretly lazy question, that, really.
That's genius.
It is cheating.
Do you know, I've never been talked about Adam's profession, and that's basically because I'm not sure I've ever known what he did for a living. It's a bit like Chandler and Friends,
you know.
I mean, I think he was sort of a computer programmer or something. And in the new series, he goes for he gets a new job because again, fine. I mean, he's like one of those people. How has he funded his life?
Yeah.
So I was never asked about that because I never really knew what he did. Yeah. I did an interview for a newspaper one time. They said, "How would you like to be remembered?" I said, "Has Manchester United screwed us ever forward?"
It's just people with, imagine you with the rose between your buttocks, I'm afraid, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know. And that never goes either. And the memory of it, the memory of the pain of it never goes. But that is something, it's a funny enduring image. You know, yeah. It's like that thing, what did you do in the war, Daddy? you know, when your daughter's... the idea that that enduring image and that legacy is always there, a rose between your cheeks. But I mean, there's worse ways to go.
It's a very flattering image.
Yeah.
Jimmy. Right, you're going to stick around a little bit longer?
Sure, of course.
Mr. Jimmy Nesbitt, we'll hang around a little bit longer. This is a little bit of Razor Light for you now on the evening show.
I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Maybe I've been here too long. The songs on the radio sound the same. Everybody just looks the same. But then last night.
Radio.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Now, the Libertines have cleared up a long-standing rumour in music about Johnny Burrell being in the early lineup of the Libertines. For years, people said the Razor Light Rascal was the original bass player. But in a new interview, Pete Docherty has put the record straight. He said, "We told him we were right up the creek, and if he was going to help us out, then it would be amazing. But if you say you're going to do it, do it. Don't phone from Cardiff 2 minutes before the gig saying you're living the dream with Alabama 3. So Carl chipped in as well, and he added, "Exactly. If you don't pop your cherry and you don't do the gig, you're not in the band." Sounds to me like one less pub story just from Johnny Burrell's armoury. That one has disappeared. Anyway, this is for you, Johnny Burrell. Can't Stand Me Now by the Libertines.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I think I can call you a good friend now, Jimmy.
I hope you can, because I consider you one of my great friends.
It took a lot of years for the tabloid business to thaw.
No, but I tell you, I think we have found each other and we'll never let each other go.
Of all the people I've met, right, all the famous characters, you're the one that most ask about, like, what's Jimmy Nesbitt really like? And I always say, well, it's really interesting. Because Jimmy is almost as successful, if not more, away from telly than he is on it. And I always tell him that you seem to run Northern Ireland. You seem to have this entrepreneurial spirit about you, isn't it?
Well, also, I mean, it's nice to have a kind of a presence in Northern Ireland. It's where I come from, and it is so much of me, you know, the place. And I think you'd find an awful lot of people who come from Northern Ireland of my age who come from there during the period of the Troubles, the period of the conflict. Even though I wasn't directly living in the areas mostly associated with it, it always provided the backdrop to your life. So I think we're very protective of Northern Ireland at a time when it was perceived in the world as a rather dour kind of, you know, place which was just about conflict. I think we were always kind of wanted to be protective of the spirit of the place. So a few years ago, I was lucky enough to, I have a company over there called G&H, which, so I do all the facilities for like Game of Thrones and stuff. There's a lot of stuff being filmed over there now. We have new studios opening. There's about to be a huge new Warner Brothers show called Kryptonite. Game of Thrones will start shooting again. So, no, I'm delighted to have a bit of a presence over there, also in my business. And then, as you yourself know, having been over there with me, I play a bit of golf, and it's a very exciting time for Northern Ireland.
I found myself standing next to you at urinal, Jimmy. Now, Slash Gordon's a book I'm putting together, right, about the most famous people I've bumped into and had awkward conversations with in the bathroom. You have found yourself around some incredible characters over the years. You must have a great Slash for me.
Well, I've had a couple. I mean, interestingly enough, I was at Wilderness recently, and I was come out of a toilet, and just going into it was David Cameron, of all people, with his detail standing right behind him. But I would have loved to have stood beside him, actually, in the lavatory there. It might have made a lot of sense about things. But anyway, I have a good one with that. I went to the European, the European Championship, the Champions League final in Moscow when United beat Chelsea. And I was at the United party afterwards. Although, I'm awestruck when I meet players from Coleraine in my hometown, who are top of the league, by the way. So I was stood in the toilet, and into the toilet came not only Paul Scholes, but his lookalike son. I mean, he's a mini-me son. I was standing there, Paul was on one side and his son was on the other. I was saying to Paul, because he injured his nose, and I went... fantastic, Paul, congratulations. How's the nose? He went, hasn't stopped bleeding yet. But his son was one of those wee dads that repeats everything his daddy says. So as Paul would say something, hasn't stopped bleeding yet, his son would go, he hasn't stopped bleeding yet. And so there was this whole conversation between the two of them as we were having what was clearly the greatest slash of my life between one hero and his son's hero as well.
I think one of the greatest players ever to walk the surface of the planet.
Brilliant. I did an interview there recently for Rory McIlroy's foundation over in Ireland at the Irish Open, and I interviewed Rory, and then Pep Guardiola came on, and we were talking to Pep for ages, and Pep said, I said, if you could, any other player that you could have either played with or managed outside of your boys. And he went, with a shadow of a doubt, Scholes.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Nice, eh?
What a story.
Radio.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week.
X.
This is Classic Albums on Radio X, and this is The Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart. And we're delving back into the Invisible Band from 2001 on the Radio X. Lovers are right into that. Alison Lindsay says, great album, feeling old with all these classics. Shustrek's loving that as well, one of her favourites. And Glenn Martin, classic album, play this one often. I played you two songs there from that album, Side and Sing. Side, really hypnotic guitar work. Banjos from Andy Dunlop with a soft, melodic, hooky chorus. Peak Travis, I think we're going to describe it as. Pop and melancholy in 1 4-minute burst. Tell you what, this is really of the time as well. The B-sides are a must for Travis fans. A version of Driftwood Live from Glasgow's Badlands, one of the greatest venues in the world ever, and a cover of Mott the Hoople's All the Young Dudes, which was written by David Bowie, of course, who was a friend of Fran Healy's. And then Sing as well, the first single from the album. It was number 3 in the UK, top 10 across Europe and Latin America. And how about this for a B-side? A cover of Queen's Killer Queen. They knew how to do the B-sides. So the album's name, if you were wondering, it came because the band felt music was more important than the band making it. And that was coupled with Fran Healy feeling odd that the band had famous songs but weren't really famous themselves, almost like the band were invisible. So that was Classic Albums tonight, the Invisible Band from Travis, 16 years ago back in 2001. If you've got a suggestion for a classic album in future, get in touch, 83936 and at Radio X. We've done 29 so far this year, so it's time for your suggestions. Get in touch, 83936 and at Radio X.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Jimmy Nesbitt, the star of Cold Feet, is on to the 7th series of it now. He's a very busy man, but he's found time to pop in tonight. Jimmy, you're a very busy man, right?
Mm.
You live between Northern Ireland and London. Mm. You also have daughters at university now.
I do, yeah.
And I believe they're fans of Radio X as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Peggy, who was 20 yesterday, yeah. Unbelievably, is indeed a big fan. She's at Bristol University reading psychology.
Yeah.
As she always says, when I'm... if ever we're with anyone, and it's the two of us, and someone says to her, what are you studying at university? And she always says, psychology, then points at me and says, lifetime of subject.
Has she started unpeeling the onion then? Has she started?
She's been doing that since she was about 2. And then Mary's 15, and Peggy loves the show.
You told me a brilliant story. I think it was about Peggy when she was a little girl in the back of the car.
Oh, yeah, in the back of the car.
Come on, please tell it. It's great.
She was a great talker, Peggy, from a very, very early age. She wasn't even 2 and a half, and I was driving her in the car one day. So it was just the two of us. She was in the back in the booster seat, and after a while, I broke wind, I farted, and there was a pause, and from the back of the car, all I heard was another minging fart by James Nesbitt. Genius. What? I knew you were there and then she was going to be a great psychologist.
What a great boy.
Or comedian. Oh, she's magic.
That's superb. Jimmy, there's another story I tell people quite often about. One of the worst dressing downs I've ever had by anybody who happens to be famous is from you. And I remember for about half an hour shaking in my shoes because the fury was spectacular. You rang up and you launched into me, proper hairdryer. And I was like, God, dear me, Dad, have I really upset Jimmy? And you're like, you put in the newspaper that I had DVT. And you said, I can't now fly to New Zealand for The Hobbit. I've lost my insurance. It's all your fault. And like you went, I was trying to say, Jimmy, and you were like, no, don't give me that. I said, you in your newspaper. And I was like, Jimmy, and you went at me. Right? It was a proper doing. And then at the end of it, I had to point out to you that you'd actually told the radio the day before that you had DVD. So we were playing golf.
Yes.
And you were wandering around, you had a sore calf because you'd been travelling long haul.
That's right. I know. And then, and if you remember, because I was playing the same, we were in the same team.
Yeah, we were.
As we are every year at the Great Mini Masters, which is raising money for Luca. And Ray Wilkins it was, or someone, or Gianluca Vialli who was there. They looked at my angle and they said, that looks a wee bit dodgy to me. But I was flying back to New Zealand the following day. And they said things to DVT. But then, as you know, that was quite a liquid sort of day that. And I think I happened to leak on the radio that I might have had a DVT. And then you're right, I did have a right go at you. I apologise.
That was a great one.
What came out of love, though?
It was great, though, the way that you sort of reverse ferreted out of it so spectacularly. But you could have died. DVT.
Okay, there was only a wee one, to tell you the truth, when I got there, because I didn't realise, and I got out to New Zealand and they looked at it and they said, yeah, it is there. So so you go in the rat poison for a few months and... Well, I've had worse to tell you the truth. That was better.
Jimmy, all the best to Cold Feet 7. You've got loads lined up. It's always great to see you. The drinking ladies, George Clooney.
He's got a long road ahead of him still, I think.
Good man, and I hope you're there beside me. Cheers.
Jimmy, would you like to introduce the last song to your daughter before we go? It's by a band called Portugal the Man. Over to you.
This is for Peggy Nesbitt, and this is Portugal the Man.
Could keep my hands on myself.
Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm very excited about our next guest. I've been a distant fan. I saw him first at the Edinburgh Festival, I think, about 9 years ago.
No, did you?
I did, yeah. I'm trying to remember today if it was the Pleasance or maybe somewhere else, but
nine
it all blends
years
into
ago.
One.
Yeah, that probably would have been maybe the Reserve, Pleasance Reserve.
That's the voice of Joel Isaac, by the way, from the Pleasance Reserve. That's right, that would have been right. 2009, I think, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, that was, yeah, because that's when I won the Chortle... Student of the Year, gosh. Them were the days when I were a young lad.
Since then, Joel Isaac has gone on to be on all those great comedy TV programmes. 8 out of 10 Cats does Countdown.
Yeah.
Would I Lie to You?
Yeah.
Lots of stuff on Dave.
Loads of stuff on Dave. They've got a bit of budget now, so, I'm up for it.
Do you have a wing of the house now called the Dave Wing?
I should do. I've just bought a house and I'm doing it up. Maybe I should call one of the rooms the Dave Room. In fact, because I did Taskmaster on Dave,
yes.
And one of the challenges, I won a chair that had David Bowie on it that Noel Fielding had bought.
Yeah.
So I could put that chair in that room. And have that. That's a lovely idea.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
The Dave Room.
And then you could film it as part of a Dave special and charge them even more.
Yeah.
And then put in the Dave hot tub.
That's great. I live, when I'm in London, I live with Jenny Bevan, the costume designer. Yeah. And when I first started staying there, she'd just done with, what's his chops? It was in Sherlock.
Martin Freeman.
No, the film one.
Jude Law and...
yeah, that one.
The very famous.
But Guy Ritchie directed it, and she showed me around the house, and she'd had new floors done, and she kept going, "Thank you, Guy Ritchie," to throw everything she was pointing at. And now she's doing some Disney films, so everything is like, "Thank you, Disney. Thank you, Disney, for the new windows."
Joel, thanks so much for coming in. It's a real pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me in this weird egg that we're in.
Yeah, we're inside a mint.
A minty egg.
Yes.
What do you make of this?
What a combination a minty egg would be.
Could I have a minty egg, please?
Is that before dinner or after dinner, the minty egg?
Somewhere in between. It's full dinner. It's just the dinner.
It's great to have you in, though, because I know you're a busy man. You're on tour at the moment, so to squeeze you in has been quite difficult, but you are here.
Yes, well, the tour starts in February, but I'm doing like a kind of pre-tour thing where I try out the jokes, which is hard work, because so often they're not as good as you think they are. And then, like, a silly thing that you didn't spend any time on turns out to be hilarious.
Is that a horrible feeling when that happens, when you think, I've got something good here?
Yeah, and then you're let down by it hugely. Yeah. It's such a process of trial and error getting the show together, but it is joyous when something that you really believe in then does get... Like, it's worth it for those few moments where you go, ah, I thought that was funny, and it is.
It's always great, that little comedy insight. If people are listening who might fancy seeing one of those shows, you can see it at the Leicester Square Theatre. You can do it up in Glasgow at the Comedy Store as well. You'll see Kevin Bridges try material, or who did I see around? Michael McIntyre. People like that try it in little venues. Where do you do yours? Where can we catch you doing that?
So I'm doing, because I live in Birmingham, I'm doing quite a few at the Glee Club in Birmingham, which is a lovely... a little venue, and I'm doing some in London, in just like pub gigs, basically, that kind of thing. And then one in Leeds at the Wardrobe, which is a nice... It's not in an actual wardrobe. I mean, it feels in some ways like a wardrobe, but it's a nice, sweet little venue. So that kind of place, and people know what they're coming for, so they know I'll be reading from notes and it'll be a bit messy.
So can we have something exclusive then? Give us a little line that you've tried. A gag maybe you thought was brilliant. Feel free to lie as well.
Well, I'll tell you what did happen. So I try out a lot of stuff on Twitter, and I've noticed Twitter's got, like, a bit spiteful recently. I don't know.
Recently? Well, oh, God, it's a forum for... If Mother Teresa was on there, somebody'd say she has chews.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see Mother Teresa on Twitter.
Imagine. Maybe that's that could be one of your new characters on there.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that would do a lot for my career, if I'm honest. I did a tweet on GCSE Results Day because I wanted to sort of show solidarity to the people that didn't do that well in their results. Because I... it's hard, isn't it, when you get your results and you haven't had a good run. So I just, it was a sort of silly half joke where I said GCSEs are like Kardashians, really not that important. That was all it was. And the amount of people that replied was, well, my daughter actually worked very hard on her exams and she should be respected for all the work she did. I was like, oh, jeez. So I then put like a follow-up tweet, which was something like, I'm not sure, I can't read it out exactly because it contained a rude word, but I just said, to all those people saying that GCSEs are important, I'm not saying that they're not. I'm saying that they're not as important as having a massive D, is basically what I put. Which is important in life.
It is important in life. It's always a
and
bad
that's
sign.
That's why I've done ever so well.
It's always a bad sign when you have to follow the tweet up and do a bit of explanation.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I stopped doing it now. I got one which I loved. I did blankety blank with David Walliams on ITV.
That's not a euphemism, is that?
Well, it sort of is. Around Chris, I think we went out on Christmas Eve and it wasn't well received. And I got a tweet from one woman saying, "You're not funny." And I looked on her profile and she's a self-esteem coach. Failed at the first hurdle there, haven't you?
Oh, wow.
So a friend of mine suggested that maybe she's a self-esteem coach for another comedian.
Yes.
So it's like part of her work is to sort of bring me down.
Joe Lycett's on tour right now. You're going to stick around a little bit longer, Joe?
Yes, of course.
That's a relief. I'm going to play a song for you. It's dedicated to you. This is The Killers, The Man.
I love it.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This is the evening show with me, Gordon Smart. And in the last few weeks, you might have noticed, but Queens of Stone Age and Foo Fighters have been having a pop about what they fear is the decline of guitar bands. And Foo's drummer Taylor Hawkins has been at it again. He's had another dig at pop and electronic music. He said, "To me, the things I don't love about EDM and pop music is the lack of human feel. I get sad to think that the human feel of music is going to be gone from the mainstream and it's all just going to be sort of this clicking and popping of computers with auto-tuned vocals. To me, that sounds so depressing." David Guetta will be crying into his laptop listening to that. Taylor Hawkins clearly prefers his rock heroes.
Radio
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This is Radio X. You're listening to The Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart. Joe Lycett, one of the greatest comedians of his generation, is in the studio. 10 years.
Love that.
You're a veteran.
Can we write that down somewhere? I'm having that on a poster.
Have it for the poster. Stick it on the poster.
One of the greatest comedians
of his generation.
Of his generation. Can we go with the greatest comedian of my generation?
You've got 15 minutes to prove it, my friend.
Oh, I'm not going to come out well.
So Joe is here. He's on tour at the moment. I'm going to ask him a very infantile question, which I think might suit you after I read your book. You might be into this. Okay. I'm writing a book called Slash Gordon, and it's about the most famous people I've encountered in urinals and had awkward conversations with. Right. You know, you've got to say something, haven't you, sometimes? Mm. And mine was Sean Connery, and the idea is that we carry the book on, so I'd love to know who
you had a wee next to Sean Connery?
Yes, it was very awkward. And I said to him, "It's a real honour to meet you," and he just looked at me and said, "Now's not really the time, is it, son?" So that's the start of the book.
Oh, wow.
But the dream is to carry on the chain.
God, I got shivers. Did you have a look?
Yes, I did, yeah.
How's he doing?
Very well. Very well indeed.
Wow.
There's a reason he's loved.
Yeah.
But the idea is to carry on. I'd love to know who the most famous person, Sean Connery, has found himself beside at a urinal. And we've had some great answers. We had Ronnie Vannucci from The Killers the other day was telling us about standing next to Shaquille O'Neal, which is an intimidating thing, a man who's 7'2". And he just said to him, "Nice watch."
Oh, nice.
Joe, you've been on all these great programmes. You must have found yourself having an awkward encounter.
Do you know what? The problem I have with this question is that I can't use urinals.
Stage fright.
Get stage fright. Oof. And it's got worse because I did a bit of material about it in my early stand-up about how I just couldn't do it. And then people would come up to me after shows when I was in the loo going like, "Oh," and so it got worse and worse. It became this, it's like,
agony.
Sometimes now I just can't go in, even in like a closed environment. I have to like go through like three locked doors to be happy enough to go for a wee. So I don't really use urinals, only when I'm a bit drunk. And I think the only famous person that I can think of that I've... And again, I tried to have a wee and then it didn't happen and I went to the cubicle in the end, but I didn't tell him, was Danny Dyer.
Oh!
After a recording of Cat's Countdown. It was in the, I think, a Malmaison hotel. Other hotels are available, but we happened to be in there. And he was not sober, I would say, and sort of just... I remember him, like, I came in and he was, like, at the urinal and he just sort of turned and had no sort of regard for his own privacy, so just it was just out. Like, he was just a very confident man in all ways. I then stood next to him and had an inane chat and then after he left, I then scuttled into a cubicle because nothing was happening.
It's funny you mention that because Danny Dyer has one massive testicle.
Wow! I didn't know that. You've got all the best facts, haven't you?
We should spend more time together, Joe.
We should.
I could
like
fill
that.
Your head full of utter nonsense.
Look, anytime.
I've got
get in touch. Drop me a DM. We'll go and have a spritz.
While we're on the subject of you doing gigs as well, I'd like to ask about the worst heckle, or maybe the best heckle that you've been on the receiving end of. I know it's a common question to ask a comedian, but we're filling in a book of them as well.
I got in Edinburgh maybe 4 years ago, a couple about 20 minutes into my... I was doing an hour show, about 20 minutes in, just walked out, and they were on the front row, and the guy just went, it's just rubbish, isn't it? Give me a ring when you're funny, and then stormed out.
Oh.
And I was like, he's not left a number. I'm going to drop him a line. That was really, because like, when people walk out, it's like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that's about the only time someone's walked out of one of my shows. Normally, they just stay out of fear.
You're asking for trouble, aren't you, if you do that? Because you are going to make something of it. That's the gift of having the microphone in your hand, isn't it?
I do think that in Edinburgh, there should be like an amnesty about 20, 15 minutes in, something like that, because you do sometimes go and you go, ah, it's not for me and now I'm trapped here. That every show should just go, no judgment whatsoever. If hey, maybe you're a homophobe and you didn't realise. If you want to leave, go for it.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
You are listening to The Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart. It has been a lively week yet again. On Tuesday night, I did a runner from Radio X to get along to the GQ Man of the Year Awards at the Tate Gallery in London. What a great building it was. It was the 20th anniversary of the gig, and it's given me some of the best nights out of my life over the years. It was weird walking in as well. They had like this big retrospective of some of their most famous covers, and Johnny Vaughan was on the first edition. Incredible. It was responsible for a promotion, GQ, the GQ Man of the Year Awards, and nearly a sacking on the same night when I worked in newspapers. So it's always a lively one. But this week was as surreal as ever. Pele was there. What an incredible man he is. Made a great speech. Anthony Joshua as well. Definitely one of the best sportsmen on the planet right now. And Mark Hamill, a.k.a. Luke Skywalker. He won the Icon of the Year Award. Made a lovely speech as well. But I was there because I've got a bit of an interest in a Scotch whisky called Copper Dog. We sponsored the Best Solo Artist Award this year, which went to Stormzy. And he asked for Jeremy Corbyn to present the award. Didn't hear anybody in the room go, oh, Jeremy Corbyn. Did fancy starting it, though. Anyway, Corbyn was there to present the gong, and I got to present them both with special edition bottles of Copper Dog. I've never felt so Scottish in all my life handing Stormzy an award. And he, to be completely honest, was absolutely hammered, so the whiskey was the last thing he needed. And Jeremy Corbyn told me he was teetotal, so that was money well spent, I think you'll agree. One man who was ballooning around was Mr. Liam Gallagher. He looked like he was enjoying himself. He's wearing his own interpretation of Black Tie, which looked like black bin liner.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Joel Isaac, are you a big fan of music as well?
I do like music. I'm pretty bad at like sort of the knowledge around it, but yeah. I enjoy pleasing sounds. I can't, like, this is the thing, I can't tell you, like, oh yeah, that album came out in 2009. I don't know any of that about anyone, but I have quite an eclectic mix on my Spotify.
Joel, you've been on my mind a lot this week, right? Because I got your book.
I can't stop thinking about
it. You're on my mind a lot this week.
Yeah.
For a number of reasons. One, I was reading the book, right? I got it on Tuesday. It's in paperback now. It's been out for a year. It's called Joel Isaac, Parsnips Buttered.
Yes.
It's done very well. So much so it's now out in paperback.
Yes, out today, yeah.
And you create some characters on Facebook and wind people up, and you've done it to newspapers over the years, which made me feel a little bit nervous because obviously I was involved in that for a long,
yeah,
long
you
time.
Were, yeah.
But something really weird happened this week, and I thought you might have been on the wind up.
Oh, what happened?
Well, that's a relief because you've either got a great poker face.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't you. I got this email out of the blue saying, I'm acting on behalf of somebody quite famous who would like you to do something naked. There's quite a bit of money involved. Are you interested? I thought, oh, that's spam. Nonsense. And I just said, look, I've been doing this for a long time. Don't mind me.
I can spot that. Yeah.
And it carried on and on and on and got to quite a dark place where I said, I've got friends at GCHQ who can find out who this is. Panic stations. So it wasn't just a random...
Did you find out who it was?
No, I didn't.
The top celeb who
was
involved.
I was reading your book at the same time and you'd created all these characters.
Yeah.
I can't give you the name of the person because I think there still might be something in it.
Right, yeah.
But it was almost like one of your characters. The name even had some kind of resonance. Was it you, Joel Isaac?
No, I wish it was. It's a good idea, to say. Because that's a good in, isn't it? So I work with someone incredibly famous.
But maybe that leads into explaining the book, Joel, because you like to cause a bit of a nuisance of yourself. In it.
Well, I did try and sell a story to The Sun, which is in the book, about Matt Baker from the one show Kicking a Pigeon.
I'm giggling along at these things. They're brilliant.
The thing is, at no point did I have a picture of Matt Baker kicking a pigeon because it doesn't exist. So yeah. I knew I wasn't going to get anything in the paper. I just sort of wanted to see. And all of the others, Daily Mail, all of that, like, just didn't reply. But the Sun really quickly got back in touch and were really keen on getting this picture.
The other part that I loved about the book was the awkward pictures with famous people, because again, I spent 10 years of my career having... not you do it deliberately, I did it accidentally, but making virtue of it is fantastic. My favourite is Edwina Curry, by the way.
Yeah, who doesn't understand the brief at all and smiles. Oh, Edwina. I think she thought I was taking the mic, which I sort of am, but I'm not really. Like, we're all in on the joke.
Yeah.
The amount of people who don't get that it's a joke as well when you
Cuba,
post it.
Cuba
like,
Gooding Jr. got it.
That was a good... Yeah, he was great, actually, Cuba Gooding Jr. I've done about 500 of them now. Often they're not with, like, celebs. They'll be, like, with animals of really funny. I did one with a goat, really funny. But yeah, it's become like a rolling...
We should explain why, really. Why
yeah, so it's called Always a Pleasure. I mean, there is no why. It's just I'm doing it. It's called Always a Pleasure, and I basically... We should do one after we've come off the wireless. We just look unhappy to see each other, and then I post it saying, always a pleasure to see Gordon. Like, that's it. That's all it is. It's just one joke. But I've now been doing it for about 5 years.
I know. Well... Joe, it's been such a pleasure having
you. Thanks for having me. No, I've had a lovely time.
You've got the paperback is out now. That's it.
Paperback's out now. Tour goes on sale tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
When it's finally finished. How close are you to being there?
What, on
to being finished with it,
the
happy
show?
With it, yeah.
It won't. I'd say about halfway, because a lot of it will be written close to the time, so it's topical and relevant.
Are you doing Jack Whitehall pyrotechnics and a horse on stage?
Unlikely. I'm thinking about, because on the last show of the last tour, I did a big theatre in Birmingham, and I bought a confetti cannon because I thought it would be fun to just spend a bit of money on, like, final one. But I got the wrong cannon, and I bought... I mean, it's a theatre, maybe a 1,500-seater theatre. So it's a nice theatre. But I bought a stadium shot, which is two giant cannons that were put either side. And because I just wanted to see what it looked like, I set it off in the first 15 minutes of the show, just on a random. And it was absurd how much stuff came out of that cannon. So I did enjoy it. Maybe I'll take a stadium shot to everyone, just the pub gigs. Just fire them out the window.
Go and see the environmentally unfriendly Joel. Joe, all the best with it. I'm sure it'll be
thanks.
Fantastic.
Thanks. Have a lovely rest of your show. Thanks for having me.
We'd love to come along and heckle you as well.
You're not welcome.
Joe Lycett on tour and his books out.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Thanks very much for downloading the Evening Show podcast with me, Gordon Smart, and producer Vin. We will be back with another edition next week. In the meantime, please leave a review and tell all of your friends. I'll catch you later on.
Radio
X.
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.